Citizenship in the World Requirement 4. Explain international law and how it differs from national law. Explain the role of international law and how international law can be used as a tool for conflict resolution. Let's start out with the differences between international and national law. International law is a term commonly used to refer to laws that govern the conduct of independent nations and their relationships with one another. It differs from traditional national legal systems in that its primary concern is the activity of nations rather than private citizens. You're not going to see an international law that prohibits a particular person generally from doing something. In other words, it's that body of law which is composed for its greater part of principles and rules of conduct which states feel themselves bound to observe. The rule of law relating to the function of international institutions or organizations, their relationship with each other, and their relationships with states and individuals. Certain rules of law relating to individuals and non-state entities, so far as the rights and duties of such individuals and non-state entities are concerned, international community may occur as well. But generally, international law refers to one of three things. Public international law, which governs the relationship between provinces and international entities, such as an individual or a group. For instance, treaties, laws of the sea, international criminal law, and international humanitarian law. Private international law, or conflict of laws, which addresses the question of which legal jurisdiction a case may be heard, the law concerning which jurisdiction applies in that case. And finally, supranational law, or the law of supranational organizations, which concerns at present regional agreements where the special distinguishing quality is the law of nation states are held inapplicable when conflicting with supranational legal systems. So how is international law a useful tool? Let's focus on the second part. Private international law addresses directly the question of what happens when legal systems collide with one another. If a citizen of one nation commits a crime against the citizen of another, who gets to hear that case? So having those rules laid out and having everyone agree ahead of time prevents that a priori conflict from occurring. Same thing applies, for instance, to treaty law. It's always good to know where one's shores or rights as an international actor begin or end. The example I'll use recently is the law of the sea. Currently, the United Nations is accepting applications to see what nations and in what regard are going to have access to the area under the Arctic. As ice melts and land reveals itself, United Nations is going to be called upon to be the arbiter of disputes over who has access to such things. Having a direct body to deal with these cases could theoretically prevent war. The problem is we have no idea what the hypothetical trade-off would have been had there been no supranational organization there. So having those rules ahead of time can be useful in the establishment of a conflict resolution. The second half of this requirement is to select two of the following organizations and to describe their role in the world. The first organization that I'll be including is the United Nations. It's an international organization whose stated aims are facilitating cooperation in international law, international security, economic development, social progress, human rights, and the achievement of world peace. It was founded in 1945 after World War II to replace the League of Nations, to stop wars between nations, and to provide a platform for dialogue, what some critics refer to as just being a talking shop. Contains multiple subsidiary organizations to carry out its missions, and currently 192 members, which includes every sovereign state in the world except for the Vatican City, is a member. While it has offices around the world, the UN and its specialized agencies have regular meetings throughout the year, and generally meets in Turtle Bay near New York. The organization has six basic organs: the General Assembly, which is the main deliberative assembly where people talk, the Security Council for designing resolutions regarding peace and security, the Economic and Social Council for assisting in promoting international economic and social cooperation, the Secretariat, which provides for studies, information, and facilities needed by the UN, similar to, for instance, the Government Accountability Office or the Congressional Research Branch. The International Court of Justice, which is its primary judiciary organ, don't confuse this with the International Criminal Court, and the United Nations Trustee Council, which currently doesn't actually do anything. Other sub-agencies you may have heard of would be, for instance, the World Health Organization, the World Food Program, and the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF. The most generally recognized figure within the United Nations is going to be the Secretary General, who's currently Ban Ki-moon. So now that we have that basic out of the way, what is their role in the world? The United Nations serves, as it primarily says, as a talk shop. It's a case where all sovereign nations in the world have the right to air grievances against other nations. Now, in some cases, this can be bad. For instance, common targets are the slamming of Israel's human rights record, despite the fact that most of the claimants to these problems have probably far worse records themselves. Attacks against the U.S., verbally, of course, and generally other ways for developed and developing nations to air grievances against one another. So the main benefit it serves is quite simply as a talking shop. Another thing is it allows international groups to get on the same page. For instance, the United Nations issued a set of global development goals that were hopefully going to be achieved by 2015. They now look impossible, but it was at least a case of the world governments getting together and at least agreeing in principle on the direction in which they wished global action to occur. The second organization about which I'm going to speak is going to be the World Court. The International Court of Justice is the UN body. In this case, we're talking about the International Criminal Court. It's a permanent tribunal set up to prosecute individuals for genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and crimes of aggression. The problem is crimes of aggression is pretty poorly defined, but again, that's outside of the scope of this requirement. The court's creation is probably the most important change in international law since 1945. It gives authority to two bodies of international law that deals with the treatment of individuals in terms of human rights and humanitarian law. As of this recording, there are three trials against four people underway, which indicates a massive step up from previous history. The International Criminal Court is intended as a court of last resort. It's investigating and prosecuting only when national courts have failed, and its setup has a specific definition of what that includes. Most of this was debated during the passing of what was called the Rome Statute, to which nations who wished to be subject to the ICC signed in. The goal was to allow a court that allowed universal jurisdiction. However, this proposal was defeated in large part due to the opposition from the U.S. Compromise was reached where the person accused of committing a crime is a nation or a state party. The ICC covers that when the alleged crime was committed in a territory or state party, or where a situation is referred to the court by the UN Security Council. So obviously that doesn't include the true universal jurisdiction that it was originally going for. The ICC once again allows for cases where a national government is unable or refuses to act in terms of humanitarian law. For instance, a head of state commits genocide against a nation's own people. This is a case where the ICC would step in and attempt to try. So far, no head of a developed nation has been tried in this fashion, but currently there are several key cases where six investigations were open, all of them in Africa, involving various nations. And some were referred to by the state parties, and others were referred to by the UN Security Council. So, again, the goal of the International Criminal Court is to function, one, as a theoretical weight to hang over the bodies of international actors, a theoretical court of last resort, where even if national options had been extinguished, where one could still be drawn for justice. The other benefit of it is it allows for a third party to deal with law cases, especially, for instance, in the aftermath of a war, where it wouldn't be obvious necessarily which of the parties would have the right ability to apply jurisdiction.